Just Call Me Lucifer by Angel C. 585. The connoisseur in him had decided that there was nothing in this world more beautiful than the contrast of harsh purple bruises against her pale porcelain skin. Careful consideration had led him to the conclusion that he rather fancied the daisy chain of marks around her neck the best in his extensive repertoire. Thinking on them for long enough would make his head spin even more than the sight of huge, still shocked brown eyes when she would find herself trapped between his powerful body and the nearest substantial vertical surface. Bookcases, walls, doors, even his late mother's trellis arch in the rose garden had been sights for various pouncings when he would make his mark on her body, even while showing her how intoxicated he was by it. In the beginning, she had fought him tooth and nail, the utter futility of it rendering him amused as well as aroused. Slowly, though, logic had won out, and he had been disappointed to see the resignation in her eyes as she dully accepted that any strength within her 5'3" frame was simply no match against a man who could have easily rivaled her brother Bill for height and musculature. It was at this perilous point that he decided provocation was the better part of amusement. He would force her to fight back at him and catalog each episode in his mind, sorting and rating them, reliving his favorites through a pensive until he found himself a connoisseur of her fiery temper as well. She was, he decided, his very favorite toy. When he'd first brought her home, he'd been almost overwhelmed by the possibilities her presence offered. She'd come to him a blank canvas, though he'd laid his designs down on her body soon enough. While the essential elements of her personality were there, the temper, the flair of courage, the occasional defiance, and the secret damage of a handsome brunette boy that she'd hidden away, but which undermined all her Gryffindor bravado, it was Draco's delight, his privilege, to work them like clay, pushing, molding, pinching, and kneading until he formed a work of art that was truly spellbinding. And best of all, she wasn't the static marble of the sculptures his mother had so loved. She was fluid, always changing, reacting, her body awakening under his touch, as her mind would rise and fall out of conscious rebellion and submission like storm-tossed waves. The pleasure he found reminiscing over the stone basin gave rise to a new idea of how best he could enjoy and anticipate the discomfort that thrilled him so. After all, he was a man of wealth and taste. He'd heard tell, whispers in dark corners of unsavory parties his parents would always attend but never mention, of the perfect place to expand the horizons of her horror. He'd pored over every inch of the library until he'd found it in a slim, leather-bound volume with neither title nor markings save the odd triangular design embossed on the front. The reverse oubliette, the antithesis of the original oubliette, which had served as a place things were put to forget them, this world, with the right adjustments, function instead to force the occupant to relive their moments of greatest terror. He threw himself into researching and experimenting, crafting the perfect prison that would require her mind to truly hold her. Even so, he was careful to never let his attention to this pursuit supersede his other study. He turned the testing of her emotional and physical pain threshold into a veritable art form. Every time she uttered a new whimper, tried to find a new way to stay the onslaught of his hands, his lips, his teeth, he'd delight in the ever-widening array of reactions he'd spurred her to. Her wide brown eyes greeted him as he beheld her, victorious both in his completion of her new home and in his search for the object of his depraved obsession. With practiced ease, he gripped her upper arm over newly formed bruises, flowers of yellow and purple that to his mind were more beautiful than any of the blooms in the manor gardens. She was hauled along down wide hallways and through luxuriously appointed rooms, the opulence of which did nothing to endear them to her. Too many memories held memories of anguish and fear, dark corners of sharp pain. Eventually, he had brought his quarry to his latest achievement, a work second only to her transformation. He waved his wand. It had been so long since she'd held one. At the locks which had materialized on either side of the door, which proceeded to swing open. Before steering her inside, he placed his lips next to her ear and whispered a few parting words before leaving her to her memories. No one's charging in on a firebolt to rescue you, Jenny. Welcome to your happily never after. Something in the phrase, both vaguely familiar and long forgotten, stirred her as she turned to his too close face and whispered a question he'd only ever answered with his actions, not his words. Why? Why are you doing this to me? After all I've made you, you still have to ask. Really, some of us don't have the luxury of naivete, Geneva. You're more beautiful this way. I've made you more beautiful. You were always a work of art that only I truly appreciated, and I've molded you to my tastes. You were too young for Tom to appreciate, and precious Harry was too blind. I alone saw your potential, and I alone will see your perfection fulfilled. With that parting salvo, the door was shut. He'd waited almost a week for the effects of his latest efforts to truly impress on his masterpiece before returning to view his investment. What he saw, perhaps, he would reflect, was the height of her beauty, but he resented it nonetheless. Through the color of the blood puddled around her only enriched her hair and contrasted wonderfully with her markedly paler skin, he couldn't help but feel she'd stolen his fun, wrecked his game, trashed his gallery. He closed the door in disgust. He did so hate broken toys.